This is the Rebel Author Podcast, where we talk about books, business, and occasionally bad words. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of the Rebel Author Podcast. We are nearly in double figures. I can't believe it. But we're not there yet, Sasha, so you better get on with it. Okay, I am starting today with a question. Do you set yourself a reading goal each year? I do, and I use the Goodreads app, which allows you to set a target for the year after the 1st of January. You then tell the app or the web page when you start a book and when you finish a book, so it keeps track and you get to see a log of everything you've read at the end of the year, which my geeky self really likes. I usually set my goal to 52 books just because I can't stand failure and I know I can hit 52. Secretly though, this year I wanted to hit 75. I don't think I'm going to do that, which is why I'm glad I set 52 as my goal. I think I am going to get close though, but that cigar just ain't gonna be mine this time. However, I would love to know how many books you've read this year. Tweet me at RebelAuthorPod and maybe show me a pile of your books, or tweet me how many books you have read this year, or even tweet me your favourite book this year. I am going to do a blog post all about my favourite reads for the year and my most anticipated reads for 2020. I just thought by way of recommendation today, I would give you a book that I've read recently. I have just finished Atomic Habits by James Clear, and I thought it was enlightening and really thought-provoking. It showed me both how to establish new habits and also efficiently break the old ones. I highly recommend it, and if you read it, let me know. A couple of podcast episodes ago, I mentioned Rebel Author merchandise. Well, I'm very excited to say the initial designs are now done and I will be loading those up over the Xmas break. Thank you very much to Icy Cedric, who has done the design work. If you need some design work, go check her out. I will leave a link to her website in the show notes. But come back in the new year when I will finally have them up and loaded and you can brandish yourself a super defiant rebel author like me. In January, I will also be bringing you a Scrivener metadata tutorial. If you're not in my Facebook group, 13 Steps to Evil, then hop on over, because come the first-ish week of January, I say ish because holidays are crazy and it might be the middle of January by the time I've finished editing it, but one of my super kind Facebook members, Tim Seabrook, has taken the time out to record a video tutorial for us on working with Scrivener metadata and how it can help you keep track of things in your novels and your world building. So yeah, hop on over, and I will also leave a link in the show notes for the Facebook group. Okay, I have been talking about the books that I am working on at the moment. I told you all that I have paused my fiction book tray and flipped over during Nano to The Anatomy of Prose. So I thought I would give you a little bit of an update. I don't know about anybody else, but I seem to be hemorrhaging days at the moment. I mean, if it's not pieces of my body falling off and resulting in emergency bloody doctor appointments or dentist appointments or, you know, chiropractor appointments or any other menagerie of appointments out there, then it's fucking kids' Christmas fairs and nativities and jumper days and kids' parties, and then it's cars that won't start because, of course, nothing in England knows how to deal with any other weather condition than persistent rain, including, apparently, our transportation. And, oh, yeah, lest we forget the Christmas shopping for our aunts and uncles and mums and dads and cousins and stepsisters, stepdog's uncle's wife, you know? Oh my God, I am exhausted. And we have not even done our 1,000-mile round trip of bloody family visits yet. So, yeah, I will quit bitching and tell myself to suck it up, princess. But, you know, anyone else finding December hard to actually get anything done? Okay, so today is the 13th of December, and I am going to quit bitching because I have at least made progress since the end of Nano, where I had 30,000 words, and today I have broken 41,000 words on The Anatomy of Praise. Now, this level of words for nonfiction would usually fill me with delight. Both my 10 Steps to Heroes book and 13 Steps to Villains books were around the 45,000 word mark. However, I am at 41,000 words and the end is nowhere in sight. Yeah. Books this year just don't seem to die. This is like totally a theme for me this year. Trey wouldn't die, prose won't die, anyone else's book not dying. Ah! Anyway, let's move on. This week, the listener rebel of the week is Claire Good. I would just like to take a moment to thank Claire for emailing her listener rebel and asking me to continue this segment of the show. I did mention last time that I am almost out of listener rebels and I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to compete? I'm not competing. We're all rebels here, darling. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to continue the segment if I didn't have some more. So thank you, Claire, for emailing me. And don't forget, if you would like to be a listener rebel, then email your story to rebelauthorpodcast@gmail.com or tweet me at rebelauthorpod. So, Claire says, my mum refers to baby me as the bulldozer. According to her, and I'm sure totally objective reports, I used to run instead of walking. I bumped into things all the time, fell downstairs and occasionally strode over other toddlers crawling in the paper. I laugh. I shouldn't laugh. That's terrible. I shouldn't laugh, but girl after my own heart. Although this might be less about being a rebel than an inconsiderate little rascal, I also wasn't very fond of going to bed when told to. After my parents tucked me in, I used to set myself free by jumping over the edge of my bed. After a few short-lived getaways, my parents resorted to clipping my sleeping sack to the mattress. Oh my goodness. I was made a prisoner behind the bars of my crib. My crime? A total disregard for curfews. Seriously, total night owl here. That night, I sent the message that I was untie-downable and that I was determined to have things done my way. At least, that's what I imagine my parents felt when they saw a tiny mattress crawling its way along the corridor, seemingly on its own. Underneath, a bulldozer baby clipped to her... clipped to her bed by her sleep sack, who didn't mind bending a rule or two to break free. I fucking love this story so much. Ah, oh, what a legend baby Claire was. If you have a rebel story, please, please, please email it to me at rebelauthorpodcast@gmail.com or tweet me at rebelauthorpod. We have two new patrons this month. Welcome to Meg and Holly. Thank you so much for your support. It really, I know I say this every time, but genuinely, it really does mean the world to me. And it also ensures the podcast lives. And whenever I say that, I always feel like Frankenstein. No, wait, the chappie who made Frankenstein live, because I'm like, ah, my podcast lives. Okay, so I am prepping up for December's Patreon-only podcast episode, where I will be talking through my transition from full-time day job corporate slave to full-time self-employed freedom person. Anyway, as well as answering patron questions on this topic. So if you would like to ask me questions on that topic, or if you would like to get early access to all of the Rebel Author podcast episodes, you can do so by visiting www.patreon.com/Sasha Black. And that is Sasha with a C, not an S. Hopefully you all know that by now. Oh, and don't forget, you also get access to the backlog of posts when you join up. You don't just get new content, you get all of the content from before as well. And you get to determine the topics and themes I talk about in my Patreon-only posts. So, on with the show.
Hello, and welcome back to the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I am with Brian Cohen. Brian is the CEO of Best Page Forward, an author copywriting agency that's written over 2,000 book descriptions for the author community. His books have also sold over 100,000 copies. He's also the creator of Amazon Ad School and the 5-day Amazon Ad Profit Challenge. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Sasha. I'm happy to be here.
You are most welcome. It's an honor. I have listened to the Sell More Book Show for years, so it is a great pleasure to finally get to talk to you in person. So thank you very much.
Sure. We've had emails.
We have. Yeah, we have. I've joined some of your webinars and so on and so forth, and read Sizzling Synopsis, which I love. And if anybody hasn't read the book, I highly recommend it. So
thank you.
Tell listeners a little more about you, your books, your business, and how you got to where you are.
Sure. Well, I started publishing in 2010. So I got in early. Doesn't mean I did a great job when I got in there early, but I originally started by repackaging together some of my blog posts into a book. And that was a book of creative writing prompts. I've always just really gravitated towards helping writers, and as a writer myself, wanting to help me to get better too in the process. And so that was kind of the beginnings of it. As you mentioned, a few years after that, I started the Sell More Book Show podcast with Jim. And that's been amazing. We just recorded episode 289 today, which was wild. I know this will air later. We might be close to 300 by then. But yeah, it's been really interesting to follow how the industry has changed and grown. And my business has changed from just writing books to then writing book descriptions to doing courses to running challenges and all sorts of craziness. So there's like a lot that has happened over those 9 years, but the theme that really seems to kind of keep bringing it back is just helping the authors who are able to, you know, listen to the stuff I'm doing, help them to sell more books. And I will try to sell more of my own books too, but it's really, that's always really been secondary to just, I love authors and I love writers and writing, and so just helping people do their thing.
I always think it's really interesting because I fell into publishing in much the same way, in that I wrote a lot of blog posts because I'm senile and needed somewhere to write down all of the things that I was learning, which inevitably helped others as well. But so I always wonder, is there really such a thing as altruism? Because, you know, we're here, we're helping, but actually we learn from that process of helping other people as well.
There's always a selfish reason behind everything, but better to do a good thing for a selfish reason than not do any good things.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. So I had a question from a patron who wanted to ask you about your courage. So recently you've done several things in the public eye, from relentless advertising to your podcast where you publicly took everybody through your advertising challenge, and also to the very specific AMS ads challenge. So talk to all of us about why you decided to do that, why you decided to go down the road of sharing so publicly something that was really in its infancy.
Well, we'll start with the altruistic reason and then we'll go into the selfish reason.
Okay.
The altruistic reason is, and I've had a couple of people in that show, Relentless Authors Advertises on Hiatus. It was about 32 weeks or something, where every week I shared what I spent on my ads and what I earned in royalties. And I did have, my month of May was like a big loss. Fortunately, the other months were pretty good. And I think one month was even like the opposite of May with 100% ROI. But I wanted people to see that it's not just guessing, and it's not just luck, and it's not just the people at the top of the heap running ads and other people can't do it. Like, I don't have a giant, big selling fiction series my business does well, but no one really wants to know that stuff in the author world. They want to know like books and how the books sell and how the ads work. And so I thought, well, if every week I just share exactly what I'm doing, if I share every bit of it, then hopefully people will find some benefit in it. And I got a lot of people who said, like, I love that you shared when you screwed up. Because we don't see that too often, right? Like, we're hearing the big wins and it's connected to selling something. And a lot of the podcasts are focused on big wins for good reason. It's almost like the opposite of like news, where like bad stuff sells news, but good stuff sells podcasts and products. But yeah,
I completely agree, because I was listening to your last episode where you said, actually, let's have success stories from people who have gone from 2 figures to 3 figures or 3 figures to 4 figures. Yes. And that's so true. Whenever, some of the very large Facebook groups, they have numerous posts from people, oh, I've hit 100,000 or I've hit this and that. Mm-hmm. They are so inspirational, but also for some of the authors who are just beginning, it's actually really overwhelming and sometimes it's not encouraging. But yes, okay, sorry. Anyway, your other reason.
Yeah, so the non-altruistic reason, I wanted to improve my own book sales and I wanted to learn the platform better, because I'm obsessed with knowledge. I don't remember what this was. It was either in high school or college when I was with my parents. I seriously do not remember the circumstances behind this, but my mom had to share like what her greatest worry was about me. And that was really great. My mom and I have a great relationship, but she said her worry for me was that I would never stop like wanting to like learn things, and I'd be so focused on learning things that I guess I wouldn't live life, or I wouldn't like find my way. And it's kind of funny because I'm falling into something where I do need to keep learning, but it's getting to teach that. I always quote Stephen Covey, the old, well, sure, there's lots of ways of learning, but one of the best ways of learning is if you teach it, because you retain 90% of what you teach. So if I just keep teaching whatever I just picked up about Amazon ads, and I'm still learning, absolutely. Like, I'm finding out new and interesting things to try all the time. But the non-altruistic, there's one is I learn it, and two, I can teach it. So lots of selfishness happening
here. So what were your main learning points from it?
Well, I think that I proved out for me and a lot of other authors I've gotten a chance to work with that the answer when an ad isn't working is not necessarily let's increase our bid, let's tell Amazon to take more money out of our account. That's not, in some cases, you're making money hand over fist. Your conversion rate, which is how many clicks it takes to get a sale or a Kindle Unlimited full book read, if it's like 3 clicks leads to a sale, and I've been fortunate enough to have a couple of those, and like, yeah, let's keep spending on those. But if you're not in that boat, which 99% of the author community is not, then you shouldn't just say, well, 40 cents didn't work, let's bump to 60, let's bump to 80, let's bump to $1. Then all of a sudden you're like, wow, I lost a lot of money. And it's because profit needs to be the number one focus. And to have profit, you need to spend less and make more, which seems like, well, duh, but based on what I've seen people actually do, it's not necessarily the rubric that people are following.
Oh, yeah. So you recently, at the time of airing, it will be not so recent, but you recently completed your 5-day AMS ads challenge, but you're intending to launch another one. So can you tell listeners a little bit about the challenge, what it involves, and how they can participate?
So this was wild. Like, imagine that when you're going through like a course, like any of the courses, because there's a lot of courses, we all know that. I've had courses, there's courses, there's ally courses, there's all sorts of courses. So imagine that when you're going through a course, it's not just you doing it. Like, you aren't just the only one like in your room watching the video. There are actually 800 to 1,000 people all doing it at the same time. And so when you're having a problem with something, you can go message someone else. You can post in a group. You can say like, I have no idea. I touched Excel and it blew up. So I can't put these keywords in here. What do I do? And there's a bunch of other people doing it at the same time. Some of whom are in your genre, some of whom aren't. And that was kind of like my experiment. Like, what if, and there's been challenges all over. Like, I've seen challenges that are like the $1 million challenge, 5-day $1 million. And I'm like, what does that even mean? Cause I'm like, are we supposed to like rob 5 banks in 5 days? Like, I don't even know. But this was the Amazon Ad Profit Challenge. So the goal was, if we sat however many people would show up together all during the same week to watch the same videos, create the same ads using the same free systems, all of it, like nothing required that requires any money in there. And we all did it at the same time in an effort to have at least just one profitable ad. That was the goal. It wasn't $1 million. It was, can you get one ad that is spending $2 and you make $3? Like, we're not looking for miracles here. Would it work? And it didn't work for everybody, certainly. I didn't expect it to. But through people sitting down, doing the challenge, all working on it together, it was pretty amazing. There were authors who had just never had never understood it. Like, maybe they'd created ads, they heard about it on a podcast, they created something, they lost 10 bucks, so they stopped. Who never really understood it, first and foremost, but then just really understanding that the concept of profit. Whoa, I spent $3. I sold $6 worth of books. I made money. And so that was what the challenge was. There was homework and extra credit. I did not expect this, Sasha. Well, but I should have known, because we're all nerds, right? Like, I'm sure you were a nerd. I'm still a huge nerd. So when there was a chance for extra credit, we all did it. And because we're all word nerds, and we all did it. And so I put this extra credit. I'm like, I don't know if people will do it, but it'll give them something to do. And so many people did it. And so it was kind of like, the homework was like, create 2 ads. And the extra credit was like, create 10. And then someone's like, I created 39. And it's like, just people just going all in on it. And we all got to work on it together. And I learned so much at the same time. And so like a day in, I'm like, well, we're definitely doing it again. And so we are going to do it again in January. But like, that's what it is. It's like this free-for-all class social experiment sort of thing. And it was wild.
So this is more from a point of technicality, having run a lot of AMS ads over the years.
Yeah.
Is 5 days long enough to see profit? Because some of my ads take a week before they really kick in. So when I saw it was 5 days, I was like, can you really get, you know, I mean, obviously you can, but yeah. I mean, you saw a lot of people getting profit or?
Yeah, that was the thing I didn't know.
Yeah. Too.
I did not know. I was like, well, I don't want to make it too long. I don't want to make it like the 30-day challenge because people are going to tune out. But
yeah.
I wanted to try. And I will say there was a slight cheat in there. There was a prep work day a few days before the challenge began. So it was really about 8 days, but still 8 and 5 days, not that different. And yes, dozens of authors posted about turning a profit, and some who didn't turn a profit said, okay, I didn't turn a profit, but I have never sold like this amount of copies of this book. And if it's a loss, I'll take it because I've never seen this happen before.
Amazing. Okay, let's get nitty gritty. I've got my nonfiction AMS ads down, but I know that a lot of the listeners are fiction writers.
Yes.
So talk to the fiction authors listening. What are some really tangible, actionable tips that people can go away and implement now?
Well, I think the biggest tip I can say is that think of what would feel like a crazy amount of ads for you to create, and then multiply it by 10, and that's how many ads you should be creating. Like, man, 40 would be a lot. All right, 400. Man, 60 would be a lot. 600. Like, I've walked a lot of people through kind of the process of, all right, you do some testing and then you use the testing and you put that to the next level. People are like, oh, the next level, that sounds good. Like, I'm ready for the next level. Been doing this 3 days, ready for the next level. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, there are authors. There's a great author out there, James Rossone, who I've had the pleasure of speaking with on the phone. And he posted one of those 20 books posts, the $500,000 over the course of, I think, 18 months. And I was speaking with him about ads and in his post just saying like, yeah, so I do this exact strategy. I get like hundreds and hundreds of ads going. I keep researching. I find the also bots. I go deeper. He's done a lot of like kind of what I call second generation, third generation ads. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of book sales is continuing to do keyword research. And so now he's like my go-to. I'm like, look at him. Cause he didn't jump to the next level. He said, no, like I'm creating more ads, more targets, more research. And I think the number one thing I can say to fiction authors is keep hunting for more targets and creating more ads.
Follow-up question. Was he wide or is he in KU?
I believe he's in KU, but I can definitely look it up. And I can talk about KU on this for sure.
Well, I'm wide, so I'm more interested in knowing how to get the ROI working on why. I mean, obviously there are going to be KU listeners, but I think it is naturally easier to get a good positive ROI on your AMS ads if you are in KU, because obviously you get additional page reads. But I think it's a lot harder to get a positive ROI if you are wide, because obviously you don't have the extra possibility of page reads.
Oh yeah. I mean, your book needs to convert better, because if you in the formula, and we all love formulas, right? Because we're all math people. In the formula, it's really how many clicks does it take you to get either a sale or a full read? And if you take full reads out of the equation, then you know, you need to have that figured out. How many clicks does it take to get a sale? That's the only thing you can get. So you need to really, I think if you're wide, you need to make sure you know your numbers cold for how many clicks it takes and what your read through is, because you have a smaller margin. Doesn't mean you can't profit. I know authors who are wide who do exceptionally well with Amazon ads, but they have a longer series usually. But they also, look, you've made things more complicated for yourself by being wide. That's just how it is. The decision to like, well, I'm cutting out Amazon on KU, second biggest platform, but I don't care. I don't want to just depend on Amazon. That's there's like an ideological component to it. Like, I'm not letting them get all my stuff. Harumph. And I get that. I really do. Rebel, rebel, rebel. So, but you complicated it more for yourself, because you need to now figure out, well, what's my conversion rate on Apple? What's my conversion rate on Nook? What's my conversion rate on Kobo? And you also need to be applying to Kobo promos, running BookBub ads on all of those platforms, running Facebook ads that are targeted to that specific demo. But if you actually went down the line, you spreadsheet it out like crazy, and said, well, this is my conversion rate on all these platforms, so I know this is how much I can spend for a click. If you knew all that data and your series is long enough so you're getting good read through, you could absolutely make Amazon ads work for you. It's a challenge, entirely possible though.
And I think for people who are listening, who are perhaps at the beginning of their series and are frustrated that they are not getting ads that are hugely profitable, just keep writing and publishing, because most authors, especially if you are wide, you need 4, 5, 6 books in a series and or another series before you can really start to see that sale through. Yes. So yes, and also excellent segue. I wanted to ask you about data. So yes, when you work with AMS ads, or actually any ads for that matter, you have to deal with data. And yes, obviously most of us are word nerds, like you said, mm-hmm, and we are not fans of data. I am not a huge fan of data. I play with it. I kind of pay lip service to it mostly, but I do try. But yes, there are a lot of data phobic people out there, particularly authors, who are still desperate to create ads on all of these different platforms. So what do you say to those authors who are perhaps afraid of data and of getting it wrong and spending loads of money that they perhaps, you know, well, it's an investment, so I'm loath to say that they don't have it, but you know, sure, you know.
No, I understand exactly. Well, start with profit. Start with not 900 points of data, advertising cost of sale, aka ACOS, aka a bunch of crap, because that's just a stupid statistic. Start with profit. Look at a month, look at your past month. If you ran ads, you can look at your past month based on how much you spent and how much you earned. If you see, I spent $10 and I made $30, which number is bigger? If the royalties are bigger, you made a profit. If the ad spend is bigger, you had a loss. And that's where it begins. Like, I have a couple clients, it's really interesting, a couple folks who do like nonfiction and such. And I have one client who, this was really nice, spent $150, made $2,500. And I basically said to him, it is my goal for in our working relationship for you to see what would happen if you spent $1,000. Because with that kind of profit, because it's a large profit in that case, and if you have a large profit percentage-wise, you spent $5 and made $80. It's a very similar kind of thing there. My goal would be for you to see what would happen if you spent $50. Would you then all of a sudden make $800? You don't know. And you don't have to look at all the other numbers. Like, you don't have to. You can make it very, very simple for yourself. If there's a wide gap, and you're spending a little bit on ads, you're making a lot more in profit, then try to close the gap and see if it continues to widen. And so to make it all real simple, just focus on one number. And then if you aren't profiting, the second number to focus on is conversion rate. Because if you run the numbers, you say, ah, crap. So I spent 10 and made 1. So you look at your numbers, you're like, well, I got 30 clicks and only one person bought. Well, that's pointing to that. I like to say, this is my new favorite line, your data tells a story. And if you, you know, keep working on that, maybe you get to 100 clicks. I always like 100 clicks versus just 30. And you see, okay, only 3 people bought. Then you say, all right, something is wrong on my sales page. Because that's what conversion rate means. Some 100 people got to your page and 97 people said, nah. So you have to figure out what made them say nah. And it could be your cover, your book description, your number of reviews, your title. And so if you are just to go back, if you're profiting, try to spend more. If you're not profiting, figure out how many clicks it takes for someone to buy. And that is literally all you need at this stage of the game. We don't need Amazon Ad 303 course that's taking us to figuring out your click-through rate and your keyword duplicates and your just product targeting ads and all sorts of stuff that you don't need because it's too early.
I think there's something in there around a mindset shift, because when I came in and I was first starting to advertise, you, even when you do make profit on your ads, there's still this fear around, well, if I spend more, what if I don't? But actually, the whole point is that you have data, you have hard facts. If you are spending $10 and making $100, why the fuck wouldn't you spend $100 to make $1,000, you know?
I'd forgotten this was a saucy podcast.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes, oh, yeah.
Oh, do not. You know, I used to be an improv comedy. You know how many F-bombs I would drop on a weekly basis? Worry not.
Yeah, oh, no, yes, I have a very bad potty mouth. I am known for it. I have
it
to...
It is okay.
What's the word? Censor myself whenever I'm on anything else. But I couldn't be bothered with that when I was going to interview everybody. I just need to not censor myself. Yes. So mindset shift. I just think that authors have to, you know, really swallow that actually, if you want to make money, you are going to have to spend money. And if your ads are profiting, just spend more because you will make more. But you also segued again.
Look at you.
I know. it's almost like I planned these questions. Into your sales page. And I can't speak to you and not talk to you about blurbs and hooks.
Yes.
So as I said, I think I've even written a blog post about how good your sizzling synopsis book was. But do you think there's a formula to writing a blurb that authors can use as a starting point?
Well, I think there are notes to hit. Like, I have my formula. I mean, you've read the book. People have read the book. Start with a hook, synopsis, selling paragraph, call to action. I've said it a million times. But if you don't want to follow the formula, that's fine, but there are certain things you want to make sure you get in there. Having some kind of hook, some kind of top line thing, and making that first. I forget who I was talking to, but they were playing with putting social proof first. Like, they had a bunch of review quotes and they moved the hook down and their sales dropped like a rock. Doesn't mean it would happen for everybody, but it's like, well, like, I would have predicted that happening, because You need to, before you give them social proof of a review or a testimonial, even if it's from someone big, readers need context. Can you prove to them that this book is in a genre they like and that it's interesting and that it has an interesting like hook to it that would make them excited as a reader of that genre? If it does, but that hook is like buried, and they're like, this book is amazing. It's like, well, I don't care about this click. But if it's like, the world is going to explode in 5 days and a baby is the only one who can save it. Like, well, that sounds interesting. I've never heard of a baby saving the world before. So let's go into it. And then it's like, this book is amazing. Babies will love it. Like, whoa, I didn't know babies could read. And then they buy it. You need that context in there first. So I love to talk about with the synopsis and you know, from the book, it's about a character. It's about what the character's going through. I don't think that I see a lot of blurbs that are like 15,000 years ago, this thing happened. I'm like, I don't care, and neither will your readers, because they're not in this. You love your story so much, but if it's in the context of, like, you know, David's ancestors have always been burned at the stake, it's like, okay, like, what's happening here, as opposed to the 15,000 years ago, because it's a person, because it's someone they can connect with. If you get, like, you're like, I hate selling paragraphs, I hate calls to action, fine. Get a hook in there, get an interesting character in there, and you're going to be ahead of so many other blurbs.
Before I move on to the next question, love the narrator voice, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So carrying on with hooks and taglines, Adam Croft is famed for his hooks, yes, and taglines, but he also says that he doesn't think every book has a hook. Mm-hmm. So can you talk to an author who's struggling to find their hook? They've written a book, they've got to the end, they've got it to publishing, you know, there's a motion in the book, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, but they are struggling to find something punchy to catch a reader's eye. What should they do? Where do they look for that hook?
You're lucky, because I just posted a video about this. Actually, it might not even be out yet, but I'm ahead for, like, the first time in my life. Every hook of a book should be about one of three things. It should either be about death, love, or enlightenment. The third one's usually more of a literary fiction thing, because someone's coming to some realization about himself or about the world. Most genre fiction is going to be death or love. Who's going to potentially die in this book, or who's potentially going to fall in love? I don't know a fiction book that would not fall into one of those three. And if it's not death, maybe it's maiming, but whatever. It's you need to pull one of those threads. Not every book has a hook, fine, but if it's a romance book without a hook, then the hook is the romance and the characters involved in that romance. Maybe your sci-fi book doesn't really have a hook, but if there's a character who's studying some cure to a zombie outbreak or something, then it's like, well, then that's the hook. Like, you need to find, and the hook being like, everyone will die unless he figures this out. So death, love, or enlightenment. It's very unlikely you're going to be able to not pull one of those things out. I mean, look at Adam's Croft. Would you murder your wife to save your daughter? That's got death and love in it. So that's why it's a double plus good hook.
Amazing. I've never thought about it like that, but thinking about it as you were saying it, I was like, oh yeah, they really are all one of those three. Go taking mental notes, gonna go and rewrite mine.
We'll watch my podcast later. Yeah.
Okay. This is my favorite question always. This is the Rebel Author podcast. So tell me about a time when you unleashed your inner rebel.
So I told you before this that I, like, don't look at the questions, but I scrolled through and I saw this one. I was like, okay, I'm still not going to think of an answer about it beforehand. I'm interested. I'm such a rebel. I remember this was on stage at the first 20 Books conference in Vegas, and I was kind of going along. I had a lot of energy. I actually have on my wall. I don't want to take it down because the tape's not going to work anymore. But someone wrote on a paper plate, whatever drugs Brian is on, I want some. So that's on my wall because I had a lot of energy. And so I get to a point in the presentation where I'm just, like, giving action steps and telling people what to do. And I kind of, like, I could tell there was a vibe in the room of just, like, I have to do stuff. And then I just started yelling at them. And this is on YouTube. So, like, I need to, like, find exactly, I should just get the 1 minute clip of me yelling at people, because I know that it's on there. I don't watch, like, what I do afterwards, but I'm just yelling at them. Like, if you don't do this, if you don't take any action, you don't do something to distinguish yourself, then a year from today, you're going to be in the exact same spot. And it made me really, it made me realize that sometimes there just is that need for the tough love. Like, a couple of things that don't happen that often in the author community. There's the sharing of the failures by like influencers, whatever. And not just like, oh, I worked too hard and I got burned out because I worked so hard because I'm such a hard worker. That wasn't a failure. The failure is like, I lost $1,000 in May. But the other thing is, we don't see a lot of tough love. We don't have that many tough love people in the community. And so every so often, I get on my tough love rebellion. Maybe I'll do it. I'm going to be in Vegas. I think this is going to air after that. But like in 2019, November, Vegas, that's not the way things are ordered. But I might yell at people again, because if we don't actually do the work, we're not going to make any progress.
I love it. One of the reoccurring phrases that happens to come out on this podcast is suck it up, princess. So I love it. Okay, so tell listeners where they can find out more about you, your books and your podcasts, and also your ads challenge.
All of the things. So this link will be live when this goes up. It is not live yet, but which is always like the magic of podcasting. bestpageforward.net/challenge. So if you go to bestpageforward.net/challenge, you are going to be taken to the page where you can sign up for the January 2020 5-day Amazon ad profit challenge, new and improved. Everyone will be back from the first one. So my hope is that there's thousands of people in this. So go to bestpageforward.net/challenge. I don't even know if I shared this with you, Sasha, but the Sell More Books show, which has been running like 9 million years, we're doing video now. So if you like listening, but you also like seeing faces, then you can do both. We'll have that on Facebook and YouTube and places. But if you listen to a podcast like this, and you want to listen to more podcasts, you can listen to the Sell More Books show every single week. We're here. It's crazy. I don't know how it happens.
Oh, thank you very much. So thank you to all of the patrons supporting the show. If you would like to get early access to all of the episodes, then you can do so by going to www.patreon.com/Sasha Black. Thank you very much to all of the listeners. Thank you very much to Brian for his time and for all of his top tips. I'm Sasha Black. You were listening to Brian Cohen, and this was the Rebel Author Podcast.
Next time, I'll be talking to my amazing, legendary friend, Jenna Maresi. Jenna is a YouTube sensation with nearly 200,000 subscribers. She'll be here with her potty mouth, which is one of the reasons I love her, talking all about how to build a platform as an author on YouTube and connect with readers. Don't miss it. Don't forget to tune in and subscribe on your podcatcher. And when you have a moment, please leave a review.